From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this hump day, that's right, it is Wednesday, October 28th, 2015. A bit of a rainy one outside right now. Not too privy outside, but hopefully you guys are staying dry. And we are so honored that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Wednesday afternoon because we have a fantastic show in store for you all. What a night it was. What a night it was. My thumb is still hurting from, I guess you can say, channel surfing throughout the sporting world last night, and I'm still wiping the crust out of my eyes because, folks, I am tired. I stayed up to like 2 a.m. last night. Of course, the World Series. Oh, my goodness. I mean, what was it, like 5 hours and 9 minutes? Are you kidding me? Lasted until the 14th inning. The Royals coming up clutch. We will discuss that game in just a sec. I also watched the Detroit Pistons as they opened up the season on a positive note on the road, getting a W over the Atlanta Hawks. We'll chat about that. We will also be getting you all ready for MSU men's basketball. Yesterday, I was at the Breslin Center to witness Media Day. Got a chance to chat with many of the players. Tom Izzo held his presser, which lasted pretty long. It's always an extensive one because he goes, you know, player by player by player and will list their strengths and weaknesses, so on and so forth. So you'll get to hear our coverage from that. Also, Jerry Kill decides to retire, and Kobe expected to set a record tonight. All of that and so much more. Call in 517-355-9527. But hey, let's hit you with our quick hit headliners for this hump day. All right, we start with the Okemos volleyball team. The Okemos volleyball team won the CAAC Blue title last night after beating rival Holt. The two teams could possibly meet next week in the district tournament as well. Congratulations to them. The Minnesota Golden Gophers head football coach announced this morning, that being Jerry Kill, that he will retire from coaching effective immediately due to health concerns. Kill has suffered from seizures since 2005 and said he doesn't want to be a liability. Defensive coordinator Tracy Clayus will serve as interim head coach. Really rooting for Kill. Hopefully he gets better. All right, the Detroit Pistons, they opened their season last night in Atlanta with a shocking 106-94 win. The Atlanta Hawks reached the Eastern Conference Finals last year, a very good team, only losing 6 games at home the whole year. Now, Andre Drummond was the star with 18 points, 19 rebounds, a complete man. KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope led all scorers with 21 points. And new addition, Marcus Morris. How about that? Chipped in with 18 points and 10 rebounds. The Pistons look to keep the momentum going in their favor as they host the Utah Jazz tonight in their home opener. Detroit Pistons forward Marcus Morris also announced yesterday that with the start of a new season, he is cutting off social media. He will not be a part of Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, anything, folks. He is just focused on basketball. He's taking the Tom Izzo route, if you will. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, they fell to the Carolina Hurricanes. 3-1 last night in the D. The Wings' lone goal came from defenseman Jacob Kindle. Wings look to break their recent slump on Friday when the Senators come to town. Last night, the World Series. What a game it was. It was so fun sitting there and watching what took place, even though it lasted 5 hours and 9 minutes. But the Kansas City Royals took game one of the World Series over the New York Mets in 14 innings, winning 5-4 on a walk-off sacrifice fly. And I tell you what, Curtis Granderson really made it close there with that strong arm throw out in right field. Alcides Escobar opened up the game with the leadoff inside the park home run, and Chris Young pitched 3 scoreless innings for the dub. First pitch for game two tonight, 8:07 p.m. Jacob DeGrom takes the hill for the Mets against Royals ace Johnny Cueto, who you never know. You never know what Johnny you're going to get when he takes the mound Will the real Johnny Cueto please stand up? Because I just inconsistent. But game one of the World Series was delayed also about 5 minutes last night after Fox Sports lost power from one of their broadcast trucks in Kansas City. Both teams agreed to play without instant replay. And last but not least, Kobe Bean Bryant, the Black Mamba. He is expected to play tonight in the Lakers season opener against the Minnesota Timberwolves. That should be a good game, I hope. It will be Bryant's 20th year with the Lakers, setting a new NBA record for the most seasons played with one franchise. Because we all know in sports today, there just is no team loyalty. Big business stuff, folks. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Like us there and leave a comment, and I will read it right here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet me at @AlMartinWKAR or at @WKAR_sports, our official Twitter page. All of that and so much more, folks. We got a great show in store for you. The phone lines are open. Here we go. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I am a bit tired. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. Stayed up way past my bedtime last night. I was tuned in to all of the sporting excitement, as much of it as I could, at least. Stayed up for the entire World Series. I mean, I was flipping back and forth because there was so much going on at the same time. My night started on my couch with my dog. Shout out to my dog, Chibale. I love you. She's probably not listening. But anyway, sitting on my couch and I'm flipping through the tube. And the Detroit Pistons, they started my night at 7:30 as they took on the Atlanta Hawks on the road. They start off with a positive note, and we'll have more on the Pistons because it was a pretty impressive outing for them last night. And then, of course, the World Series started. Game one, the Royals and the Mets. And you talk about drama. And to start off, you know, the creme de la creme of baseball. I mean, from the moment of the first pitch, folks, when Royals starter Edison Velasquez began hurling two-seam fastballs, completely unaware of this, of the tragic news that awaited him after the game, that his father had passed away earlier in the day. I can only imagine what went through his head after that game or when he got the news. But man, to of course the Bill Bucknerish boot by Royals gold glove first baseman Eric Hosmer that gave the Mets a one-run lead in the eighth to the dramatic game-tying homer. I thought it was over, folks, But the dramatic game-tying homer by Alex Gordon in the ninth. And then, finally, to Homer's redemption. Well, I should say Hosmer's redemption. A game-winning sac fly in the 14th. Very, very close, because Curtis Granderson out in the right field. I mean, he did a great job of kind of leaning back on that outfield catch and then using that momentum to put everything that he could on that hurl to home. And boom, it was, you know, the catcher was right off the base, game over. Royals take game one. A night packed with drama. And I didn't even mention the Fox Sports broadcast that, of course, had technical difficulties that delayed the game for 5 minutes. In the end, it matched for the third time the longest game in World Series history. 5 hours in 9 minutes. Oh, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff, folks. So entertaining, though. Unbelievably entertaining. So, Casey, they take game one, 5-4. Game two, of course, takes place tonight, 8 p.m. Mets, Royals on Fox. And such an interesting broadcast last night, too, because, you know, when they had, looking at the broadcast team overall, of course, Joe Buck, he rocked the mic. You know, and many people don't like Joe Buck. You know, everybody has, like, their, you know, their favorite broadcast lineup of guys they love to listen to doing play-by-play and color. And Joe Buck is not only, you know, it's very rare to find an individual who likes to listen to Joe Buck as he broadcasts a game. But Joe Buck, Joe Buck, I think, does a nice job. But it was interesting, not just from that standpoint. Joe Buck, he broadcasts big games. But they also had, I don't know if you guys saw this, but they also had Alex Rodriguez as an analyst throughout the game. They also had Pete Rose on the mic. I mean, how weird was that? I mean, you saw A-Rod and Pete Rose sitting on the same desk as they broke down the game, the World Series game. I mean, it was kind of weird. I must say, it was weird. But an overall, just ridiculously entertaining game one. I didn't get a chance to give my prediction on yesterday's show, but I do believe that the Kansas City Royals are going to win this series. I had stats galore yesterday, but we couldn't get to them. It was such a jam-packed show on yesterday's current sports. But, you know, just some interesting statistics, though. When you really break down the World Series, and I found an interesting article from, was it KansasCity.com, in which they broke down the five reasons that the Royals are going to win this series. And it starts with numero uno, just to kind of go through these real quick, because I find them ridiculously intriguing. I'm a stats guy when really breaking down, when matchups are really close, which I think this series is going to be very, very close, unless the Royals do take game two tonight, because if they do take game two, I can see this being like a five-game series, in my opinion. But here's the first reason they give. And just to read it really quick here, as Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports pointed out, the Mets led the majors in pitches that were 95 miles per hour or faster. The Royals batters feasted on pitches that were thrown 95 miles per hour or faster, leading the majors in average at 284 and lowest strikeout percentage at 15.1%. They were the second in slugging percentage at 432. Secondly, the Mets swept the National League Championship Series. Since the championship series went to a best of seven in 1985, six of the seven teams to sweep lost in the World Series. And that includes, folks, of course, in 2012, when the Detroit Tigers swept the Yankees, then were swept by the Giants. I remember that one very vividly because I was on the field covering that game. One of my first duties as a reporter, how blessed have I been? I mean, one of my first duties as a reporter at Channel 6 News was covering the World Series in 2012. And I got a chance to see the Tigers lose, and I got a chance to see the World Series trophy be brought down in the hallway. I got champagne on my suit and tie right before I did my stand-up. I was in the Giants locker room when they were celebrating. I mean, it was one of the most incredible moments that I've ever been a part of as a reporter, that one that I would never forget. Me and my photog at the time, David Parks. Crazy moment. But, yeah, that includes the Tigers in 2012 Number three, since the start of divisional play in 1969, 75% of American League teams that returned to the World Series after losing the year before won. How about that? That's interesting as well. And number four here, Daniel Murphy's home run outburst doesn't bode well for the Mets. And it goes on to bring up Barry Bonds in 2002, Carlos Beltran in 2004, Nelson Cruz in 2011. Each hit eight homers in a single postseason. Of course, Daniel Murphy was trying to extend his streak of consecutive homers in the postseason to seven. That didn't happen. But a very impressive run for Mr. Murphy. And number five since 2004, when the team won, when the team with the best record in the American League has advanced to the World Series, it has won. The 2013 Red Sox, the 2009 New York Yankees, the 2007 Red Sox, and the 2005 Chicago White Sox. So looking at those stats alone, maybe it bodes well in favor of the Kansas City Royals. But folks, come on now. The New York Mets aren't just going to lay down here. They've had an historical run getting to the World Series, but I'm worried about tonight. I will say that. I certainly am worried about tonight when it comes to the New York Mets, because looking at looking at Johnny Cueto, again, that's who the Royals put on the mound. Even though Johnny Cueto has had an inconsistent postseason, certainly, you just don't know what Johnny Cueto you're going to get. I think he's going to show up tonight in a big, big way. I don't know. I'm just going with my gut here. I think Johnny Cueto, even though I always say, will the real Johnny Cueto please stand up? You never know what Johnny Cueto you're going to get. I think on the big stage, game two of the World Series, the Royals take game one, all momentum in their favor. I think he's going to show up big. And if the New York Mets can't get it together, and if they do get an early lead, if they cannot hold on to that lead, it is going to get ugly if the Royals take game two. Just point blank, period. It certainly is. So I want to know what you thought of the World Series last night. Certainly entertaining, to say the least. Unbelievable stuff. Again, did you stay up, like me, for the entire 5 hours and 9 minutes glued to your television, waning on every single pitch? I always say, man, playoff baseball and World Series baseball is some of the most entertaining sports out there, folks. I mean, my gosh. I mean, I probably watched more of that last night than I did my own Pistons. That's saying a lot. You guys know how big of a Pistons fan I am. But man, oh man, was it entertaining last night. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Who do you think is going to pull out the World Series? I'm curious to know, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on game two tonight. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, who I know was glued to his TV, probably more so, not even really watching the World Series. He probably tuned in here and there, but he was more so glued looking at that New Orleans Pelicans at Golden State Warriors matchup that did not turn out well for the Pelicans. Isaac Constance, how you doing, Isaac?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Al, just fine, because the Pelicans, like I was texting you, 3 of 5 starters hurt. That's not a bad performance, losing to the Warriors by, less than 20 or whatever it was. I turned it off for the last 2 or 3 minutes, considering the fact that Anthony Davis played the worst game of his professional career.
It was bad.
So, yeah. Oh, it was ugly. Huh. And Steph Curry, boy, what a player. He was going off in that first quarter. That guy's got the silkiest shot in the history of the NBA. So, hey, though, I was watching basketball all night, end to end. I was watching Cleveland versus Chicago as well as the Pistons taking that win in a big way. I didn't see that coming. But, I got time to watch the World Series highlights, and dang, what a game that was. The longest in World Series history.
It was unbelievable.
Game one.
Right.
So, boy, this is shaping up to be a good series, I think. I think the Royals take it in six, actually. But I think we've got a good series in front of us. Low scoring. I think there's a lot of good pitchers. And I think, as the year progresses, I just see the hitters maybe wearing down a little bit, getting a little tired. I think the Royals take this behind the pitching.
It's so interesting because, you know, looking at the World Series last night, I mean, with it going 14 innings, both teams had to go very, very deep into their pitching repertoire. And we even saw, what is it? I think he's like 40 years old now. Bartolo Colon take the mound.
Bartolo.
And I look, and I tuned in and I saw Bartolo enter the game and I'm like, oh my, how is he a professional athlete? I mean, Bartolo Colon looks like my grandfather, you know, back in the day when he was just sitting back, you know, eating Cheetos every single day. I mean, he's got so much weight on him. And I'm just sitting there like, how is he? Is he a ball player anymore? And it was pretty cool because they went back and flashback to when Bartolo was young and spry. And looking at him, I can't believe he's still playing. I really can't believe that Bartolo Colon is still. But and he was effective. He was effective last night for a few innings. It was so impressive watching him out there. I guess baseball is like the only sport you can have that physique and still get it done. I guess you can say No way, other than with the exception of maybe Tractor Trailer, as you're seeing a guy that
Robert
size.
Tractor Trailer. Right. I remember that.
Remember Tractor Trailer? No way you're seeing a guy that size who looks that out of shape playing professional sports. You're just not seeing it. In the NFL, you see it because, I mean, but those guys are linemen. I mean, you know, they're supposed to be that big with that amount of girth and that amount of weight on them. But gosh, Bartolo Colon, when is he going to hang it up, dude? But he was effective. That's the thing that tripped me out last night. I didn't know what I was watching last night, but a crazy entertaining game. And I don't think that, looking at the rest of this series, there is no way that we are going to see a game that intriguing throughout the rest of the series. I mean,
no,
there's just no way. You can't live up to that. I mean, they certainly set the stage last night. And then even, you know, because I didn't even hear about this story until after it took place. The Edison Valquez situation in which his father passed away, died from heart complications at the age of 63 years old earlier in the day. So, you know, Valquez, he pitched his heart out for six strong innings before having that same heart broken by that news. My heart goes out to him, but crazy stuff. Again, phone lines are open, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We do have a few bites from that game just to play for you guys. Here's Escobar's first pitch inside the park. Homer, check it out.
If you've been watching the Royals, be ready. He swings first pitch.
It is Escobar, and he swings and hits it into left center. Back at the track. It is dropped. Cespedes couldn't make the catch. How about that effort? Digging around third. Here comes Escobar. 1-0 Kansas City. Gordon in the air to center. Back at the wall. This game is tied. Granderson back. Escobar tags. Here comes Escobar. The Royals win game one. Hosmer drives home the winner in the 14th.
Crazy, crazy game. My jaw is still on the floor. And what really surprised me, too, is even how the game got in that situation. Gordon smashing a one-out homer in the bottom of the ninth off Mets closer Jarius Familia, who has been fantastic. Familia as a closer, I mean, he unbelievable. And I didn't see that coming. I did not see that coming. It was actually Familia's first blown save since July 30th. Riddle me that. All right, folks, again, phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines right now before we hit this first break. Right now on line one, we've got my man, Apachu, on line one. Apachu, welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. First of all, I'm not watching the series. Detroit's not in it. I'm not watching it. But
right.
The idea, hey, that's how you're supposed to do it, man. I'm a free agent fan, you know.
I hear you.
If my team ain't winning, I ain't there. But anyway, the idea that Rodriguez and what's his name, Rose?
Yeah, Rose, yeah.
We're doing the games, challenge the idea that crime doesn't pay. Evidently, it does pay because I'm sure they got paid last night.
Yeah, that's true.
The reason why I'm calling, a couple months ago, I called in and I asked the question after the massacre in South Carolina of the 9 African-American people in the church and the whole issue with the flag. I called in and asked if you thought if the flag, because the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, as they call it, uses the flag in their games and it's on their campuses and so forth, whether or not that would have an effect on the recruiting of African-American athletes. And Isaac, is Isaac there?
Yes, he is, yes.
Yeah, and Isaac said, remember, Isaac, you said that that flag was different from the other Confederate flag that was in South Carolina or whatever. But yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the student government pushed the idea of removing that flag. And the administration pushed the idea of moving that flag as a result of that removing it. Well, and it became official that that flag, which has a Confederate flag over to the left corner, the upper left corner of its flag, they decided to take that off their campus. So evidently it was associated with the Confederate flag. Am I right? You were saying, Isaac, that it was different.
The way I meant it was different is it wasn't the exact Confederate flag. But no, it does have the exact image of the Confederate flag in the top left corner, just like you said. And I think I've been saying, actually before on the show, I've said that I think it's kind of astounding that they still let that fly in Mississippi. I think that, so I'm saying South Carolina took down the actual Confederate flag from the state capitol because the Confederate flag emblem was not in their actual state flag, but the Confederate flag was not flying at University of Mississippi, although it was in the state flag, which, of course, was flying. And I think University of Mississippi, what they decided to do was take down the state flag until they remove that image, which I think's the right choice.
Yeah. And I've been freaked out over the years that they would rush to the field, and they would, and these students would rush to the field and carry that flag. And I often wonder why black athletes, great black athletes would flock to that university. Evidently, they didn't flock. They had trouble recruiting blacks as they could have because of its history and so forth. But what I found interesting was, and I'm glad that they did do that, but what I found interesting was that students at MSU initiated the idea by contacting the on-campus NAACP students there to suggest that they do something about that. And
they do.
So my compliments to the students at MSU. I'm glad that they see that they're doing something very meaningful and positive in society because that's what college is all about. So go green. But I'm only going to say it this year.
Thank you for that enlightening call about you because I'm seeing here right now on CNN, the move comes after student senators voted 33-15 with one abstention last week to ask the school administration to furl the banner, which includes the Confederate flag emblem in its upper left corner. So, yeah, it was donned. It was donned. So I'm glad we will no longer see that flag on that campus. Thanks a lot, Apache. You always a fantastic call. Let's go to line two right now. Mike from Saginaw. Mike, how you doing?
How you doing, L. Martin? How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic.
Let me get this out the way. I was talking about basketball players. It's a player in the U of D called Paris Bass. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Paris Bass. I'm not familiar with him.
He went to Birmingham Senior Home. He played for the U of D.
Okay.
And, you know, he seemed like he's getting some interest from the NBA scouts and everything. The last time I talked to you, we was talking about Khalid Fielder from Oakland University. And,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And I thought I'd just fill his name in. He played for the U of D. I don't know if you heard of him or not, but he's 6'8".
Well, yeah, I'm seeing here, he's a guard forward for U of D. He's a 187. He's a freshman from Birmingham. So, yeah, okay, I'll put him on my radar.
Right. He's a redshirt. I think they redshirted him for a year, mm-hmm. which is hard to do in basketball up here. You know, now the kids, they don't want to be redshirted. So.
Right. Okay, I'm going to check him out. Paris Bass. I like the name.
But I'm going to ask you about the World Series. I was thinking that Kansas City, the way the team is built, they built like it's more like for speed and mm-hmm. for out because their outfield is so vast, it's more defensive oriented and pitching oriented than a lot of Major League Baseball teams today. You see a lot of not even American League teams. They play like for long ball and everything. But I see Kansas City, like, they got guys who can really run around the bases and be able to play defense and be able to, you know, just to do the fundamentals. I don't know if they fundamental or not, but it seems like they always have an axiom that defense win games. What you think about how their team is?
I love the Royals.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Royals. I have to say that, Mike, because when you look at it, I mean, you mentioned speed. The Royals, when you really stack them up, you know, from top to bottom against the Mets in this series. I mean, they have the better defense. They have that speed. They have better closers. They have better starting pitching. They have better at-bats. I love them from top to finish. But the thing is, you worry about a team like the Mets in this series because they have come in so hot, and we've seen so much production from them. And it's all about momentum in the MLB postseason. It's all about, can you ride that momentum all the way to the World Series? And that's exactly what the Mets did. I mean, if it wasn't for Familia not closing out that game, and we're talking about an entirely different scenario going into game two. But, yeah, from top to bottom, I mean, when you stack it up and look at the specifics and stack up the stats, the Royals are the better team, Mike.
Yeah, I'm thinking so, too. The reason why I might root for the Mets is because I want to see Curtis Granderson win him a ring, because I'm impressed with him, how he really handled himself around the media and how they used him as a campaign to try to get kids to play major, inner-city kids, especially to be pick baseball as a career and everything. But what disappointed me is I'm reading in the paper, I know Apatu talk about the rebel flag and everything, but it's no black managers in Major League Baseball. It's, they let Lloyd McClendon go. They go and hire all these guys from Harvard, Ivy League schools and stuff, and they're not hiring any more minorities in the baseball game. The reason why I brought this up is like, Torrey Hunter, who's retired, he just retired and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, would they consider hiring black and Latino candidates to be managers and general managers and everything? I know baseball has a long tradition of not facing that issue head on. I like your opinion on it.
Mike, I totally agree with you. This is a conversation that I've been having for the past few years now with a lot of individuals that I know that are close to the game of baseball. And I don't know if you saw Chris Rock, actually. Chris Rock did in one of the most compelling stand-up bits for HBO Sports not too long ago, in which he gave an entire spiel and brought up many statistics that, you know, brought up that question, why we don't see African-American managers in baseball. And he did an unbelievable job of breaking it down, even starting with why doesn't the game of baseball appeal to the African-American race, to young kids in the inner city who are looking to play a sport. It was unbelievable. I encourage you to check it out. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube. I've seen it like 20 times now. YouTube it. YouTube Chris Rock, HBO Sports Baseball, and I'm sure it will come up. But I don't know. If I knew that question, I may be working in Major League Baseball right now, Mike. But it is so puzzling how you see, even when you see, if you look at a manager like Brad Ausmus, who really didn't have any experience as a manager, he gets the bid over countless African Americans who have been so close to the game of Major League Baseball for so long, they don't even get a look at. It puzzles me. I don't know. Mike.
Think about Dusty Baker. They interviewing him for the Nationals job. Willie Randolph, who managed the Mets.
Exactly.
After, he got fired, he'll never get it. I wonder about Lloyd McKinnon. He did get a second chance. But I don't see any black people, like, or Latin people, really. You know, Tony Perez or you know, Guillen from the White Sox. You know, it's just like, as a fan, you want to see baseball be more inclusive, like to the American model, to the American, where American is supposed to be. And maybe I just figure, you know, you think in terms like when the Latin players throw their bats and flip their bats after they score, hit a home run, and then it usually be the pitchers throw at them next time they come up to the plate and everything. But it just feeds into all of that all of those theories and conspiracies. We don't like to deal with conspiracy theories, but it feeds into it.
Right. I agree. I agree. Mike, great call.
Thank you.
That was a great take on that. And that you bring it up, I see there's an article actually from Fox Sports that went viral about 20 hours ago in which, you know, Commissioner Manfred, he addressed the MLB's lack of black managers. And it's a very compelling article. And I want to bring up a stat here. The shortage of blacks in baseball goes beyond the guys calling the shots, really, folks. The number of African-American players in the majors has declined steadily since peaking at 19% in 1986. Opening day rosters this year included 8.3% of players who identified as African-American, and that was a slight increase from 8.2% in 2014, which equaled the study low set in 2007. Interesting stuff, and we can have that conversation for days. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk Pistons, Jerry Kill, Kobe Bryant. And also, you get to hear our coverage from MSU Men's Basketball Media Day yesterday. All of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Fun night last night, folks. Of course, the opening night of the NBA year. What you just heard was LeBron James trying to make it happen, trying to get the dub for his team. But a nice stuff by the Chicago Bulls forward, Paul Gasol, who had only 2 points last night. Just 2 points in 32 minutes for Paul Gasol last night. But, folks, he had 6 blocks. Talk about protecting the rim, right? And it was good to see Derrick Rose out on the floor as well. He was 8 for 22, 18 points. 4 of the 5 starters for the Chicago Bulls were in double figures, other than Paul Gasol. Fun game. And I think LeBron James is getting it. He has gotten it. Let's be honest, folks. I mean, with the game on the line, he knows that he is more of a threat, driving the basketball, making himself a, you know, just a bullet to the lane, possibly drawing contact to go to the line to seal the deal or to put his team ahead or to tie the game at the free throw line than he is shooting a jump shot. That's, LeBron is starting to get it. And he has, there was a time that LeBron James would settle for a jump shot in those moments. And I thought it was, it could have been a better drive from LeBron last night. I mean, why not attack the body of Paul Gasol and try to create some contact to get fouled? But a lot of credit goes to Paul Gasol. A lot of credit goes to that Chicago Bulls team last night, who knocked off, of course, the Eastern Conference champions last year, Cleveland Cavaliers, in Game 1. Fun stuff. I also want to shout out my Detroit Pistons. Thought they had a very good outing. Game 1 against the Atlanta Hawks, who went pretty deep. The Eastern Conference Finals last year. Andre Drummond was a complete man. 18 points, 19 rebounds, 2 blocks. The Pistons as a whole, they held one of the league's best three-point shooting teams to just 29.6% from behind the arc. Also, all 5 of the Pistons starters were in double figures. That includes KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he had 21. Marcus Morris, he played like he had something to prove. He is, I mean, right now, I mean, you could hear it after the game, too. I mean, talking about how he's, you know, going cold turkey when it comes to social media. He's not engaging in it and just locking into basketball. He wants to make it known to the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns that you made a mistake. You made a mistake, okay? He had 18 points last night. Ersan Ilyasova had 16. Reggie Jackson, 15. And Morris also added 10 rebounds. And Jackson, he just stuffed the stat sheet last night. 8 rebounds, 5 assists for him. Impressive stuff. Impressive win over an Atlanta Hawks team that was among the best in the NBA, let alone the poorest Eastern Conference last year. So I was very impressed. And the big number for me, and if they can keep this up throughout the year, the Pistons are going to be a force to be reckoned with. Rebounds. Rebounds, folks. The Pistons had a 19 rebounding advantage over the Atlanta Hawks. 59-40. Are you kidding me? That's unbelievable. That's what I'm looking for, other than, of course, defense. And I thought the Pistons played great defense last night as well, because we all know the Pistons, they've had a pretty nice and pretty solid offensive repertoire to go to, but they just let up so many points. We didn't see that last night. So, again, I know it's only game one. I know we got 81 more games left to play in an NBA year, but that's a pretty impressive start for the Detroit Pistons. What'd you see last night? What'd you like from the Pistons?
Yeah, it's hard to construe it any differently than you did. Rebounding. At the end of the day, that's mainly what did it. Yes, it was good defense from the Pistons on a lot of possessions, but the bigger deal was how they limited Hawks' big men, like Al Horford. He only had 4 rebounds on the game, while Andre Drummond, you mentioned it, he was a man on the glass. He had 19. That's the difference in that game, because Andre Drummond was just fantastic, and the Pistons did not shoot that well percentage-wise. They only shot 38.5% compared to the Hawks, 45%, excuse me. And that's the difference when you get offensive rebounds and when you limit second-chance buckets. It just shows you what you can do. And, man, I was also really impressed with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He turned, for me, from last season, he turned from an off-ball scorer who could knock down a 3 and attack the rim on a good backdoor cut to a guy who can handle the ball and create his own shot. I saw a lot of that from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope this game, and I think the Pistons, boy, they look primed to make a pretty good run. The bench was effective when they came in. They didn't shoot that highly of percentage, but everybody really did their job. Aaron Baines got rebounds. Stanley Johnson was an all-around juggernaut. And then Steve Blake managed the game pretty well. And Jody Meeks, he spread the floor, which is what you're going to get from him. So I was impressed by the Pistons last night.
Yeah, and I think in today's NBA, you have to be able to knock down the three-pointer to win. It's as simple as that. You have to be able to shoot well from beyond the arc, or you don't have a chance. With the way the NBA is constantly evolving, the three-point line is becoming so important. And that was a big stat that I went to look at as well. They hit 12 of 29 three-pointers last night. That's pretty solid when comparing it to how they started the year last year from behind the arc. Very impressive stuff. That's 41% from behind the arc. Again, they limited the Atlanta Hawks to just 29% from three-point land last night. Very impressive. And when it comes to second chances, folks, when it comes to offensive rebounds, again, that rebounding really stands out. 23 offensive rebounds for the Pistons, only 7 for the Atlanta Hawks last night. Impressive outing. Again, our phone lines are open, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's talk MSU men's basketball for a sec here, because the season is almost upon us. Of course, the Tom Izzo's team, they will open a year during the beginning of next month. And Media Day was held at the Breslin yesterday. Here is my report from the Breslin.
Going to 7 Final Fours in 17 years is certainly formidable for the MSU men's basketball team. And last year, we all know how enjoyable and magical that ride was. But talking with the players here today at Media Day, it's no longer just good enough getting to a Final Four.
When you're talking about the next level and getting that second title, has it caused you to adjust something? You used to stand up here and just say, talk about defense and defense, and guy doesn't play if he doesn't play defense. And now, three-point shooting and other things, and maybe recruiting different kind of athletes. Have you evolved a little bit in that regard?
Yeah, as you get older, you get sexier. You got to have things that are sexier. So offense is sexy. You know what I mean? I thought you would know what I mean on that. Some of you guys in here got to work on that too. So, there's so many myths about where we are, as a program. I mean, I've answered so many questions about one and dones and this and that. What you want, what you can recruit. The defense is so important. The rebounding is so important. My favorite story was when Duke won it in 10, because never heard a word out of them about rebounding. They had that seven-footer. Where's my Dukie here? Zubiak or something. And he went from a non-player to the best offensive rebounder, kick out for three guy, and all of a sudden rebounding became important. Look, as we're learning in football, as we see, to be a championship-level team, you better be good defensively. That's number one. But you better be good offensively, and you better be have, you know, your special teams got to continue to get better. Our special teams are free throw shooting, out of bounds plays, this, that, and the other thing. And you better be pretty high in all of them if you're going to be able to win a championship at the end. And maybe that's the one thing I saw last year. It got to be an epidemic. I mean, Trice was an 82% career free throw shooter. He was shooting 60-some halfway through the year, you know. So I don't think I've changed. I mean, I still think to be great. I mean, take a look. I mean, I'm blessed here because I got Michigan State football right now doing such an incredible job. I've got Draymond Green having maybe the, everybody says, the best offensive team in the country. They were actually second in their efficiency offensively. They were first defensively, and almost nobody even recognized it. So maybe if we can get better offensively, they won't even recognize our defense. And if that can stay up there, then you have a chance to do special things.
Coach Izzo has not been shy of letting it be known to the public that he wants to reach further. National championship. Final Four is nice, but he's been there before. He wants that second one. Is he vocal in letting you guys know that? What have those conversations been like between you as players and with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we might say it more than he do. We say Natty at the end of every huddle, at the end of every practice and stuff like that. I mean, we talk about it every day to each other. We know that Final Four is not enough. I mean, we was that close, but it's still not enough. It's almost like staying in the Sweet 16 or something like that, and we weren't satisfied, so that's always a goal.
Yeah, it is. We talk about it every day. You know, every time we break the huddle, we break it with Natty. And that means national championship. So we want to get there, and when we get there, we want to win it. You know, we want to get on that stage. I mean, there's nothing better. You know, last year we got to the Final Four, but that wasn't enough. You know, we left with a loss. So we have some unfinished business. You know, we're going to play with a chip on our shoulder this season. You know, I definitely am. You know, I want to get there, and I want to win it all this year.
Well, every day in practice, we go to war, and that's how we're going to approach every game. Every game is a war. So, I mean, that's just about it. You know, once it gets down to the nitty-gritty, once we get to where we want to get, if we want to get past the Final Four and we want to get to the national championship game, we're going to have to fight like it's a war. And we're going to have to come out top, on top fighting like that. So that's basically what we talk about. We got to, it's the small details, though. So, you know, we in practice, Coach Izzo, he gets on us for the smallest things, and sometimes we hate him for it. Sometimes we hate the assistant coaches for it. You know, they're going to be on us tough for the smallest things, and like I said, sometimes it's annoying, but that's what's going to make us the closest to perfect that we can be, and that's the team that's going to come out on top.
Oh, well, we're not hiding it either, to be honest. We want to win a national championship too, but we understand that a lot of teams out there are working really, really hard to win a national championship, but I think losing the Final Four last year gave us another push and another drive, and, you know, we got there, you know, it was nice. It was nice being there and all that stuff, but we lost by 20. And nobody likes losing by 20. Granted, we lost to the national championship team, but I think that gave us a better focus and a better drive. And like Coach said, we want to take it to another level.
Is the bigger memory that you guys lost by that much or that you guys got there? I mean, what outweighs you know, both of those?
I would say, you know, getting there was a lot of great joy in getting there, to be honest. You know, a lot of players is probably never going to get to go to a Final Four, but we got there. But I think, you know, losing drove us, and it still drives us every single day.
Yeah, they still think about that, folks. Again, that was a brief report from the Breslin yesterday at MSU Men's Basketball Media Day. The players that you just heard from, including, of course, head coach Tom Izzo, were Alvin Ellis III, Aaron Harris, Gavin Schilling, and lastly, but certainly not least, Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nieren Jr., as they talked about how the goal has shifted now. Getting to a Final Four, that's all fine and dandy. It's a nation's best, actually, seven of the last 17 years in which Michigan State has made a Final Four. That is a nation's best under, of course, head coach Tom Izzo. They've been there before, though. But at the same time, folks, when you do something so often, you know, it becomes numb to a degree. You start to reach higher, you know, to steal the mantra for the MSU football team. Tom Izzo wants to win a national championship. The last time they won one was, of course, in 2000. That unbelievable team with Mateen Cleaves and the Flintstones and so on and so forth. And in many ways, Spartan fans are still reveling in winning that national championship because it was such an incredible moment. I always talk about how I was 10 years old watching that moment happen on my television and how my family was just going absolutely insane watching it. But again, folks, it's been 15 years, going on 16 now, that Michigan State has not won a national championship. Tom Izzo is foaming at the mouth to make that happen. So it's going to be an interesting season. Again, you heard that they break every single huddle with the word natty, which means national championship. It is on their minds. When you come that close to something and fall that short of accomplishing that goal, you want it. And it only adds to that fire. But I'm very impressed with the team that Tom Izzo has. He harped on a lot with newcomer Deontay Davis, of course, local kid from here in Michigan. Who I got the chance to cover one game from as him and Trevor Manuel went at it during the high school basketball year last year at the famed Don Johnson Fieldhouse. That was a fun game to cover. But Deontay Davis, I mean, he's so long and lengthy, and Tom Izzo truly believes that Deontay can become one of the best big men to ever play in Spartan basketball history. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that evolves, and Spartan fans should be as well. And, you know, one of the more comical moments from yesterday's presser and talking with the players and so on and so forth was that Deontay Davis, he doesn't like to talk to the media. And it's funny because Tom Izzo, before we even got down on the floor to talk to the players, he says, hey, if you guys can get Deontay to smile and to liven up a bit, there may be a reward for you. And he's one of those guys, you know, he's kind of shy. He's very shy, not kind of shy. He's very shy, doesn't like talking to the media members. But when he plays on the court, he is an animal. So interesting stuff. Again, you'll be able to catch my report from Media Day later on today. Also, after we get off the airwaves here, I'll also be at the Breslin Center to talk to Susie Merchant and the women's basketball team as their Media Day will take place at 2:30. So, yeah, folks, basketball season is here. Let's hit our second break really briefly here. When we come back, we will wrap up this edition of WKAR's Current Sports by talking about Jerry Kill, who has decided to bid adieu to the Minnesota football program, and Kobe Bryant expected to set new history tonight. All of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports.
I've given every ounce that I have for 32 years to the game of football and the kids I've been able to coach. I've never stole from anybody. I'm not going to steal now. I know somebody will ask, Coach, what are you going to do? I don't know. I ain't done anything else. That's the scary part. I do have a Chasing Dreams Foundation that I've got to get better because that's what's happened to me.
Wow. How sad is that, folks? Again, an emotional Jerry Kill. He announced today that he is retired as football coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers, effective immediately because of medical concerns. He's 54 years old and has dealt with the effects of epilepsy since 2005. And again, you heard him there, just kind of really distraught. He took a 7-game leave of absence in 2013 after a series of seizures, and he made the decision to step down today due to advice from his doctor. So I'm rooting for him to get better. Defensive coordinator Tracy Claes, who led Minnesota to a 4-3 mark acting as coach in Kill's absence 2 years ago, and has worked with Kill for the past 21 years. He has been named as the interim head coach. Isaac, what was your reaction to that news?
Well, seeing somebody step down for any sort of medical related injury or medical related reason is always just heartbreaking. But especially such a great coach, someone who has so much passion for the game and has really done so much for the University of Minnesota. It's hard for me to believe, because when I think Minnesota, I think Jerry Kill. That's who you think of. Minnesota, yeah, they haven't always produced the best pro players, but I think last year and this year, how much they've improved over the recent expectations for this team. So it was really sad to see Jerry Kill walk away. And at the end of the day, all we can do is hope that, hey, he's healthy. And that's really what this is about. It's health related, and that's all we can hope for, that he returns to full health.
Yeah, certainly rooting for him. And Jerry Kill, he has been the Minnesota head coach since 2011, 3 bowl appearances with the Gophers. That's second most in school history. And, you know, what really gets me is when something like this happens, where you have to step away from a passion that has been ingrained in your DNA for so long, it's like, what do you do now? You know what I mean? Of course, he's going to be fighting this and trying to get healthier. But a quote that really stood out to me during his whole spiel, someone asked what he will do now, and he said, quote, "I know some of you will ask, Coach, what are you going to do? I don't know. I ain't done nothing else." That's the scary part. So, man, certainly rooting for Jerry. Again, Minnesota is 4-3 this year. After a bye week, the Gophers will host Michigan on Saturday, 7 p.m. on ESPN. Certainly rooting for him. And also, Kobe Bryant. How about that? Kobe Bryant is set to make some history tonight, folks. Kobe, one of my favorite players in NBA history. Kobe is expected to play tonight in the Lakers season opener against the Minnesota Timberwolves. It will be Bryant's 20th year with the Lakers. 20 years in the purple and gold, setting a new NBA record for most seasons played with one franchise. I think this should be celebrated, because in sports today, in the big business that has become, in all of the money that's thrown around, it's very rare to see a superstar, bona fide superstar, in no matter what sport it is, stick and play for one respective franchise. It used to be commonplace back in the day, folks. It used to be commonplace. And more so, and I think when looking at the NBA, and looking at the amount of money that's thrown into it, it's hard to turn down these millions that other teams are willing to pay you as a superstar. But it's very, very unlikely, you know, to see a superstar just stay with a franchise throughout the entire career. So I think this should be celebrated. I'm looking forward to see Kobe play tonight.
Yeah, congratulations to Kobe. With that being said, though, I don't think money was the reason he would have been attracted to another place, considering he's getting paid $25 million this year.
I'm talking about throughout his career.
Lakers can offer more money than anybody. Right. But still, an incredible achievement. And hey, Kobe's going to end up in so many record books. It's not even funny.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, and the reason why Kobe, I thought it was an absolute crime. He certainly overpaid for looking at the productivity that he has not given the Lakers due to injuries these past few years. But I think, you know, the reason why he's getting paid this much and the reason why the Lakers decided to do that is because of what Kobe has meant to this franchise for so long. So, hey, congratulations to Kobe Bryant. Looking forward to seeing him play tonight. We are out of time, ladies and gents. But thank you so much for tuning into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.